welcome to another episode of
We the People Radio.
I just thought I chipped it up a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for warning me.
Well, that takes the fun out of it, actually.
Yeah, sure.
That is my fun. So let's see, what is today? Today is April 10th, 2022. I cannot believe it. The world opened up. Everybody's having events and fundraisers and stuff, and good grief. If you're not being if you're not involved in anything and you thought you might want to be involved in stuff, I mean,
now's the time.
Pick a topic. It's happening right now.
Don't forget your mask.
In your local community. No, without your mask.
Oh, no mask.
No,
okay.
No, we're all going face.
Just
full face.
Yeah,
full face. We want to identify the people.
How are we going to know anybody?
I know. Like that lady at the deli. I'm like, who are you? I look at her name tag. Oh, I've been talking to you for 2 years. Just the bottom half of your face didn't really match what I thought it would look like. Oh, my gosh. So, after that auspicious beginning, sponsorship?
Yeah. Ness? Yeah, our sponsor is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right between Oasis and Pine Grove exits off I-5. Go up and see them. They got tractors, implements, mowers. I get a little shy on mowers right now, but they still have a few left in stock. Mower season is rapidly drawing to an end here. What is it, June 1st or July 1st or something? They don't want you to mow anymore. Might be earlier this year because of the wet weather we've been having.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, yeah, go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. And I'd also like to mention our mention of the week.
Our free advertisement of the week?
Yeah, Robinette's Automotive Repair on Hartnell Avenue. If you've got any problem with a car or a truck, go up and see them. Those guys will take care of you. They got me in at the last minute. I had a starter issue. Bring it on down. And they got me fixed up in one day. So hats off to Robinette's. Or you can give them a call at 221-6880. Yep. They're located at 2251 Hartnell Avenue.
Kind of down by the Holiday Market at Shasta View and Hartnell. And,
yeah, yeah.
Anyway, they're super nice people. They do a really good job. And yes, Bill's Truck has been the dealership for Bill's Truck has been the beneficiary of a great deal of funds. And Robinette's made short order of that. So thank you for the free money, Robinette's Automotive.
Yes.
We can now spend it on something else, and I'm sure there's an appliance in our house right now.
Just can't wait.
Plotting against us.
To let us know.
Darn.
Yeah.
So let's see.
So what do we got going today?
April 10th, 2022. Wanted to let folks know that I guess I don't always advertise it, but I really should mention we do a lot of shows about a lot of different topics. And the things that we have done a bunch of shows on, I try to list at the top of the page. I cluster them under a tab. So marijuana is a topic we've been on a lot. Not so much the things that you hear, well, actually not the things you hear in the media, but the things that are not being told, things about the chromosomal damage that it does, the elevated cancer rates in children, the danger of CBD, CBS, that's dangerous too.
Yeah.
You can't put that on your skin. Okay. CBD and hemp. So if you're using, you know, hemp products and CBD or you're giving them to your dogs or whatever and you think, oh, well, it doesn't have the THC in it, so it's not dangerous. Yeah, it's dangerous. Please go to wethepeopleradio.us. And click on the pot tab, and we, and it's not just people with opinions. These are scientists who have done research. So go and get smart and smarten up some other folks, because this is going to be a massive epidemic in the future of illness and problems. Actually, if we don't get our handle on it, it's kind of like the second coming of cigarettes.
Yeah,
you know, we're in that phase now where it's like they used to do in the olden days. Can't even imagine it now, you know, that your doctor would be in a commercial, you know, I smoke cigarettes. They're really great for me. They really take the edge off.
I'm a Marlboro man.
Now you think, really? Doctors smoking unfiltered Camels. And they did all that back then until the science basically overwhelmed the industry and the marketing, and then people got smart about it. The marijuana industry is kind of in that that in-between zone, and I'm hoping that with the spread of information, we can shorten that time frame and not kill as many people. That'd be fantastic. No, let's not kill as many kids either.
Or turn them into morons.
Well, there's always been that. That's a kind of a well-worn path, and so people think, well, you know, I don't do it enough for that. But I dare say they have no knowledge of the cancer risk and everything else. And it's not just from smoking. It's the actual plant. So please go go check that out. We thought we'd take a break from the Ukraine and move over with our old friend Fred. Fred and Ross, I met a long time ago. I think it was at a Marco Rubio thing, maybe in Sacramento, and then I used to see them at Congressman LaMalfa's thing up here in the things in the first district, and they had so much information, and I thought, nobody knows this. So we did several shows with them, and we recently lost Ross, and it was like, oh, it was like the team is down.
Yeah.
And saw Fred a couple weeks ago, and he said, oh, I have a friend. Hamid can come on with us from San Francisco. And I thought, yay, the team's back. So, but perfect timing, because this Iran deal that the Biden administration, okay, we'll use the term loosely, is working on, is probably going to be as bad or worse as the last one. But I'll leave that to these guys to talk about. So Hamid Azimi is the communications director for the Iranian American Community of Northern California. And I've put a link on there for you so you can go and take a look at the good work that they are doing. And Fred Dasmalchi, just want to know how I did on that. I've been working on it. Is a resident of Sacramento. He's been a human rights activist for over 30 years and was arrested once in 1980 in the city of Mossad after he was forced to leave the country. He increased his human rights activities to be the voice of the people in his country. He's been active in his local community, mobilizing the Islamic community in Sacramento against Islamic fundamentalists in Iran. So we have posted for you previous shows. We have Miriam Rajavi's 10 Points for the Future. That is on there. And I think we might get into some of the guys that got rolled up for pretending to be Secret Service and stuff, because that had ties to Iran, too. But we'll find out from our experts. So welcome to the program, guys. I don't know who wants to speak first, but...
Hi, this is Fred Dasmalchi. Thank you so much for inviting your show, and I really appreciate it. And also, I appreciate that you're sharing, our memories with our friend, Ross Amin. And he was really, really very much against the Iranian government, and, we miss him, and thank you for sharing. And also, besides that, thank you so much to the station. And also, my friend Hamid is joining. Also, I appreciate Hamid joining with us today. Hamid, please.
Hello, everybody. And I'm so glad to be able to take part in this program with Aaron and Bill today. And I, too, appreciate the fact that you remembered our dear friend Ross. And to tell you the truth, it's big shoes for me to fill. So I appreciate giving this chance to talk to you and through you to your listeners.
Well, we worry that with all of this myopic focus on Ukraine, that all your good work on trying to get... Maybe, Hamid, maybe you could give people the short version or whatever of whatever you guys call it. I was going to say the elevator speech about why there is so much resistance to the Iranian regime from people who either live in Iran or are from there.
Absolutely, I'll be glad to do that. So part of the story that everybody needs to know, Aaron, is that over the last 40 years, since the Islamic fundamentalists pretty much stole the Iranians' revolution, the Iranian revolution in 1979 was purely for the democracy. It was an anti-dictatorship revolution, and people were hoping to push aside the, you know, the monarchy that was a one-man rule in Iran, and the Shah who had basically eliminated all of the political parties and set up his own single party in the nation and ask everybody join it and ask the people who don't like it to get your passport and get out of the country. So this was the type of thing that...
Yeah, that's very subtle, you know. Basically, if you don't like us, get out of the country.
Absolutely. And this is the type of thing that people of Iran revolted against. And they had the revolution, and the hope was that, you know, they would have democracy and no more a single-party rule. And lo and behold, because of many, many different factors, the fundamentalists in Iran use the infrastructure that they had in the country, which ironically was supported by the late Shah of Iran, and they pretty much stole the Iranian regime's, the Iranian people's revolution for democracy, and they started establishing their own system, which over the last 40 years, people of Iran have been resisting. I basically tell everybody that there has been an internal war going on in Iran between the people and the fundamentalists who are running that country. And anybody who is interested in the history of the Middle East can easily pick up bits and pieces of data on the fact that it was really after the takeover of Iranian People's Revolution by this fundamentalist ideology that we started seeing this movement of Islamic fundamentalism in the Middle East. And in our movement and resistance, without any hesitation, we basically say this regime in Tehran, in Iran, is the godfather of all of fundamentalists, including Daesh and ISIS and whatever other names they have for it. This is the largest country in the Middle East in terms of its resources, in terms of its geographical position that it has between Russia and the Persian Gulf, with mass resources, long history of, you know, the culture having effect in other countries. And after Iran became what it is under the Islamic fundamentalist, the whole face of the Middle East has changed. So I want to emphasize that because I want to make sure that all of your listeners know this point, that this issue of Islamic fundamentalism that you mentioned at the beginning of your introduction to is something that we, the Iranian people, have been focusing on as one of the topics of discussions, one of the main topics that everybody needs to be aware of. And there was actually a book that the main opposition group that we support, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, or MEK, published in 1993. And the title of the book was Islamic Fundamentalism, the New Global Threat. Mm. I think that title says it all. That,
yeah, no kidding. You
know, yeah, absolutely. So our story is a story of resistance. It's a story of trying to let the people in the Middle East and in the world know that we do need their support and their backing in what the people of Iran are doing inside the country. And as you mentioned, I sincerely appreciate Aaron, you putting that little blurb under, you know, my introduction on your website. which pretty much says it all to anybody who is concerned about what is it that we are proposing. And it clearly says that over the years, there has been pretty much just two schools of thought when it comes to Iran. Either the so-called left, you know, saying that, oh, let's go ahead and, you know, sit down, talk to them, appease them, because still there's going to be a war. And those who basically say that, you know, the war is the only option and there's no other thing that we can do.
Yeah, the old binary choice train wreck.
Absolutely.
It takes us out on so many topics. We'll be right back. We've got to take a quick break. We are going to come back with Hamid and Fred, and we're going to speak more about Iran and the real issues with that. It's not a faraway thing, and there are people that probably live right in your neighborhood that are part of this that would be thrilled if you understood what they were talking about. So we hope that you will always send the program to friends and family. We have a lot of people outside the country who listen to. The archives are free. Robert is kind enough to take out the Freedom Moments, a.k.a. commercials. So it's uninterrupted for you, and you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Isaac there. Okay, so Hamid, I took that piece off of your website because I thought it was just so important for people to understand, because that does seem like the only alternative. Let's talk forever, or let's have a giant war.
Absolutely, and you put it perfectly here in that this binary choice has been deceiving everybody, mm-hmm. both here in the United States and elsewhere, that, you know, we have encountered, I know Ross and Fred and I, all of us who have been seeking support in the United States for our cause. One of the, you know, blockers in everybody's mind is that, oh, we don't want to get into another war, we don't want to put boots on the ground, and what have you. And the gist of the matter is that we, in our movement, that I've been involved with this movement for over 40 years now, and we are asking everybody to understand that there is a third option, a choice of empowering the people of Iran, supporting what they are doing. And I remember, Aaron, that in 80s and 81, when the dictators in Iran started their mass executions and the oppression, we used to have rallies, and our basic demand was that do not sell any arms to the Ayatollahs and do not buy any oil from them. And the message was simple, there's a fight going on between the people and the government. If you buy their oil, giving them money and allowing them to buy weapons from you, the balance between the people and the oppressors, the dictators, is going to be tilted against the people. And over the decades, and especially in the last few years, where we have had major uprisings in Iran, that people have taken to the streets and they have shown that they are willing to pay the price on their own to do what they are supposed to do, it is really apropos that, you know, everybody knows that supporting them and in political ways, in terms of recognizing their right recognizing their right to resist the dictators is one of the most important things that we can do in this country. And you mentioned California One and Representative Don LaMalfa, and we sincerely appreciate him being part of, you know, the group of leaders in the Congress that have supported resolutions, specifically there's a House Resolution 118 that we can definitely talk about more, that he has supported, and it's basically supporting the right of the people of Iran for their uprisings, for their struggle for a democratic republic, and specifically for a non-nuclear Iran, which is also a hot topic, and people of Iran do not want to have any kind of, you know, nuclear weapons or nuclear power for that matter, and we can definitely get into that in more details too, Aaron.
I had a question. How strong of a hold does the current regime have on the people? I know there's a big resistance against the mullahs and the current regime. Are they you know, do they have a firm grasp on power right now, or is it a little bit challenged by the people?
Hi, Bill. This is Fred. This is a really good question. If I want to just look at last 40 years, what Iranian government has done to that area, at the beginning, we can see, you know, that start of the Iran and Iraq war, which a lot of people got killed, and a lot of people from both sides. And then after that, look at each country, for example. In Iran, the Khomeini, when he came in power, practically to establish his Velayat-e Faqih, or supreme leader system, he executed more than 100,000 of Iranians.
Wow.
Mainly educated people, very much students, and all young people who they didn't want, they wanted freedom, they wanted secular government, and they don't want Islamic government. And that keep continuing. Look at what happened in Iraq. In Iraq also, they, you know, we know more than 500 old servicemen, you know, thank you to them for their service. The Iranian government, and through the proxy war, they used practically size bomb to kill more than 500 old servicemen in Iraq. And the casualty, you know, what they did to the Sunni, to the Shia in Iraq. And then keep this continuing. You will see Hezbollah in Lebanon. We will see how much damage, you know, this Iranian proxy in Syria has done. I can claim, and people in this area and other countries, they can realize from when this Islamic fundamentalism has come to Middle East, practically the number of the people in this area has been killed because of the impact of and policy of this Iranian government. The number of people has been killed in more than any time in the history. That shows where the people, you know, how much people have been suffered. And then I leave it to Hamid to talk about, if it's okay, Hamid, just to talk about uprising 2017, 2019, and the rest.
Absolutely. So what really shows where the Iranian regime is in terms of power and its, you know, grasp on the throat of the people in Iran is that things have really fundamentally changed, Bill. Last year during the Iranian election, the turnout was, according to the news from the government sources, the very lowest turnout in their so-called elections. During this election, the supreme leader brought to power a person who has been known as the butcher of the massacre of political prisoners, which is another topic that we'll get to. But this person was brought to power as the president after a an election for the Congress, or Majlis, they call it. The Congress was basically turned into a stronghold for the Supreme Leader. During that election, pretty much everybody or the majority were chosen by the Supreme Leader through the fraudulent election, and the Congress became a stronghold of the Supreme Leader, and then he put a person that was pretty much just in his camp trying to crush the movement of the people in the presidential palace. So he basically made everything work in his favor. Just imagine, for the sake of comparison, the House and the Senate and White House were all the same party, and there was no opposition. The reason the Iranian Supreme Leader and regime did this was that it was facing uprisings that have been getting wider and much more frequent in the last 4 or 5 years. And this was to basically stop the people's uprising, which did not succeed. And the reason we can say definitively it did not succeed was that up to this last Iranian year, which just ended at the end of March, there were 4 major nationwide uprisings throughout Iran. And the years before that, we were seeing maybe 1 or 2 national uprisings every couple of years. And historically, this was happening maybe every 10 years. So things are speeding up a lot. You're seeing a lot that shows that the people's side is getting stronger and stronger. And one of the acts that the people did against the Iranian regime was a couple of months ago, they took over 27 different radio and TV stations and interrupted the live programs with a message that was broadcast everywhere supporting the resistance movement and its leaders, Mr. Rajavi. His voice was broadcast to the people, which basically showed that in this one of the strongholds of the regime, which is its radio and TV stations, which is used, to feed whatever they want to feed to people.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to have propaganda when your propaganda outlet gets hijacked.
Exactly.
So I bet they were just absolutely. Wouldn't you just like to be a fly on the wall when they saw all of a sudden all their TV shows had the wrong people on it? I bet they were freaking out.
They did. They did. And I had the privilege of being able to save one of the experts that they had brought to their own TV after this interruption of programs, and he was saying, don't call it a hack. This wasn't a hack. This was beyond our network firewalls. It was behind anything that is connected to networks. So he was basically saying that our enemies, which is people, have infiltrated everything that we have, and worse things are going to happen. So the balance is definitely shifting dramatically in favor of the people. The regime in Tehran is not as strong as it was 30 years ago, and it really makes it much, much more important for the West to understand that they are dealing with a regime that is about to be toppled by the people. And this is one of those critical moments that, we need to understand that helping the Iranian regime is 100% against the will and the determination of the people of Iran.
What was, I'm just curious, what was the fallout from that action? Was there a big crackdown, or what happened as a result?
Well, the biggest fallout, Bill, was that because of the immense scope of the, they basically.
Uh-oh. Did we?
Amit, can you hear Amit? I'm sorry?
It's the Iranian government. They're doing it to us now. They're like, go ahead and laugh. We just took Amit off the air. No, are you still?
Hello, can you guys hear me now?
Hey, there we go.
Yeah, that's better.
We went into the cone of silence there for a second.
Go ahead, Amit.
Amit, can you hear us?
Nope. Something bad is happening in Hamid's world. Hey, let's take a break just a little bit early, and you guys can work with Travis and get the phone situation. We shouldn't have made fun of it.
We had a great thing going
we
there.
We summoned the communications gods to work against us. We're still glad that they pulled one over on the Iranian stuff, so ha-ha. And so you're listening to We the People. You can find anything about our show. Please forward the archives to friends. They will be up forever and ever and ever. We've got double of them. Robert's got a set. I've got a set. We're going to make sure that we torment people forever with this stuff. Got like 10 years of material, too, and a lot of it is still really current because the issues never really go away. It's sad. They just come back with different people in charge. You can find it at We the People Radio.
.us.
But I still believe what makes a man really has a chance. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and oppose.
We're back. we're goofing around a little bit. So it sounds like we got our...
I hope you can hear me now.
Oh, you sound
loud and clear.
You sound like you just moved in next door. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. On one side, it's a restaurant, but then we had incense smell coming in the studio, so I don't know what's going on outside. It's probably best if you stay where you are.
Yeah, sorry about that. You know why? My cell cover just dropped here, and I...
Oh, we never have that here. Oh my gosh, when I call people when I'm traveling, because I spend a lot of time on the road, and I'll be driving up the highway, I'm like, well, okay, I'm going through the mountains, so I might lose you. After about the fifth time, they're like, could you call me tomorrow?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay. No problem. So I don't know how much of my response to Bill's question you guys heard.
We heard tons of it, except just the very end. Just the very end, it started to screw up.
So the major fallout was that the regime had to shut down its main TV station. They went into a lockdown. They did not allow the employees to leave until they questioned everybody. And there are systems in terms of the back end stuff that they had that were damaged so much that they still have not been able to recover. But on top of the technical stuff, as you mentioned there, and you know, the big fallout was that they had been
been hit at the core of their propaganda machine, and they know that people, the organized, you know, cells that are doing that, they had proven that they are capable of doing the same thing, and we have seen a number of other instances where in the shopping malls, all of a sudden the PA system is taken over by people and slogans against the supreme leader are broadcast and things of that sort. And that has been happening pretty every week.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. On a weekly basis?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's got to be distressing.
Yeah. There's also, this is Fred, there's another element also I think was very important that a couple months ago when, you know, it was the big ceremony for the anniversary of the Qasem Soleimani in Iran. Therefore, what happened, there was a city in the west of Iran, Shahr Khoi, in that they had a big, big plan for that day, and practically they prepared very long, about 20 feet long, a statue practically to celebrate Qasem Soleimani, who, the good thing he got, you know, he got killed by our service people. Practically then in that day, they had the governor, they had all these religion leaders, it was around 12:30, they had that big program for him to show practically his statue. And by night, by evening, almost getting dark, at 8:30, the resistance units, practically they explode and they destroy that statue. And that was a big message to all the Iranian government and their agents that the opposition, the resistance units are strong and they can do anything they want in Iran.
Yeah.
And they are just waiting for the right time when uprising happening practically to do what they need to do.
Well, that when you had told me that story, I thought, gosh, there's nothing that better illustrates the fact that negotiating with these guys, we're on really different teams. I mean, Soleimani was not a good guy, and here they're erecting a statue to him. But I think it's pretty great that the resistance is powerful enough to be able to pull off something like that. I mean, we've watched people in this country destroy statues, and there's 900 miles of video footage. How did they get in there and do it? Would they blow it up or something?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, they actually, you brought up a very good point, Aaron. They set it on fire and destroyed it to the point that it couldn't be repaired. And when you, in this, you know, age of internet and cell phones and what have you, you gotta, everybody understands that it's impossible for any group to go after such a target without people seeing them, without somebody noticing that, you know, the 30-foot tall statue that was erected, and mind you, this was on the eve of the Iranian People's Revolution ceremonies that was going to happen the day after. The city was on high alert, and people were definitely out there looking at this thing that showed up in their neighborhood at 8 p.m. in the evening. And when the resistance units are able to go and take care of this act, it means that people around the area, people in that neighborhood, they are for them. They are with them. They see what they are doing. They support them. That's why the regime was not able to do anything, do not arrest anybody.
Yeah, because if they were a minority faction,
somebody would rat them out.
They would be all being burned in effigy, probably.
Absolutely. So that's why, you know, it's acts like this, examples like this, that tells us very clearly that these units that are fighting against the regime inside Iran, they have the support of the absolute majority of the people, without any doubt.
Well, when we spoke with Ross and Fred some years back, the thing I walked away with that that just really never left me was that every time, like I remember what they told us about that Iran deal during during Obama's presidency, and they said, you know, if they sign that deal and they give them a bunch of money, they'll kill all the political prisoners because now they no longer have value, and they will set us, the people in Iran who want to take the regime down, if they would just leave us alone to get it done, we would be able to make that happen. But they keep interfering. It's like, stop helping already. Is that still the case?
And that is still the case. And you know, the logic behind sitting down with a regime that is the major sponsor of terrorist groups in the Middle East, a regime that, as Fred mentioned, you know, this one entity, which is the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, or IRGC, the Guards Corp, IRGC, is responsible for at least 500 or 600. I believe the number that the Department of Defense of the United States published was 620-some servicemen who were killed in Iraq by the roadside bombs that were sent by this IRGC into Iraq. When we're dealing with an entity like this, you know, we should not be sitting down and negotiating with them on the issue of whether or not, you know, this group should be delisted so that we're going to have another, you know, agreement the way we it was done during the Obama time. What's the end game here? What is it that we are trying to achieve? Because as you mentioned, you give them money, you release their money, you give them their money, they're not going to go back and say, oh, we are going to be good actors now, we're going to stop believing everything that we believe in. Of course not. They're going to use it in their own advantage, because they want to dominate the Middle East, and they want to have their so-called Khalifa or the Islamic rule the entire world. It's true, and at the same time funny and sad and disturbing, that they talk about turning the White House into a prayer cell for the Khalifa themselves. And wow. they are talking about things like this, and then, you know, we want to, you know, sit down and talk with them. Doesn't make sense. And that's why, you know, we are constantly, over the years, I know Ross and I used to basically pitch the same thing anywhere that we were talking together, that the real solution is side with the people of Iran. You know, don't overlook the fact that since you are negotiating with these people, you want to keep quiet about, you know, the 1,500 people that they killed in the 2018 uprising in Iran. Don't stay quiet about, you know, the fact that they are crushing any kind of dissent inside the country. Put the human rights issue on the table talking to them.
Right.
I would like to add also, you know, the Obama administration, when they look at the beginning of the dealing with Iran, they said that they are working on changing of Iranian regime behavior. No, as of today, we need to look at it. We did really cover, we really are able to change the Iranian behavior.
Yeah, I think we can scribble that off our Christmas list. I don't think that we're going to get that.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty obvious and documented that anytime we give them a large amount of money, we know exactly what they're doing with it. I mean, it goes all over the world to fund different terrorist organizations, and they've shown nothing that tells us that behavior will change if we just be nice to them again.
Yeah, and what kind of hubris do you have to go, well, hey, if we tell them to be nice, they're going to go
through. Yeah, they'll be nice this time. Let's just give them a few more billion dollars. But that's not going to change, is it?
Absolutely. You brought a very good point. You know, that GCPA 2015 started, practically, there were two elements on that. one element we can see today after that, as Aaron mentioned, put more pressure on the Iranian people against human rights. And as my friend Hamid mentioned about 2019 uprising, killing 1,500 people. Element number two, we see the impact of that JCPOA is increasing the money Iranian government they got. They increased terror activity in Gulf area. You see in Middle East, you see this proxy war actually become, through Iranian government, become more stronger. These are the problems that we can see the weakness of last negotiation. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the question is that if all this stuff didn't happen in last negotiation, then what are we doing this time?
These people couldn't train a dog. It's very unlikely they're gonna get any foreign policy correct, because honestly, if you employed these methods with a dog, you would have a really bad dog. Yeah. You know, let's reward them for bad behavior. Let's give them extra food. Let's let them run all over the house and mess up the furniture and do all sorts of stuff, and then
when they bite somebody, we'll just
give them more food.
Give them more food.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And a better living room to mess up. I just, it's crazy to me because it's so obvious.
That's why I think this is what is missing in current negotiation, that we when we look at it, what of the problem right now is practically the Iranian activity in the Gulf area and in that area. And then this is what the action is missing right now, is we are not looking at the terrorist activity of the Iranian government. We know right now, you know, I think the best approach is practically we need to look at this activity of Iranian government. We need to talk. We need to use the experience from the countries like Israel, like the Gulf countries, like Saudi Arabia, like Bahrain, like Emirates. They are having experience in that area because they are fighting. They are against this, you know, Iranian government. They're using their proxy against them. So we need to negotiate with them. We need to come up with some comprehensive plan that includes how we are going to stop these terrorist activities of the Iranian proxy in that area. And then we can talk about it, how that much also is in connected to the within U.S., within our security also. Therefore, practically, this is what is missing right now. This was missing last time and was missing right now. I think if you heard lately, there is a relationship between Israel and Bahrain and Emirates. They're trying to come up with a strategy how to counter this terrorism activity of the proxy of Iranian government. I think one of the solutions we need to do is, is come up with a strategy, with a plan. Not only the Middle East countries, also European countries, Canada, and USA be the leader on that, to come up with a strategy. How can we practically to stop this proxy war of Iranian regime in that area? Like, so how come up, you know, we did against ISIS? We have to do some kind of a strategy to stop them practically.
Right. Yeah, I think the current administration is looking back at
Obama 2.0.
At the Obama plan as such a big success, and they just want to repeat the same thing all over again without really doing anything much different, and we're going to get the same result.
Well, all the same people are in there.
And same people.
I think that one line in your that I swiped from your website and posted, the solution to the Iranian problem is neither appeasement of terrorist regimes nor a foreign war, but democratic change by relying on the Iranian people and their organized resistance. And honestly, if you guys weren't organized, well, okay, then that would be like, yeah, that's a nice idea, but you're going to get crushed. But you guys are organized. I mean, your resistance movement is really solid in this country and in other countries. When we come back in the next hour, I want you to tell people about your Miriam Rajavi and your giant things that have happened all around the world that have involved so many people, because it's incredibly impressive. We'll be right back with Hamid and Fred, and you're listening to We the People at WeThePeopleRadio.us.